You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Kate Klein. Kate, it's good to have you here this morning.
Thanks, good to be here.
So as we get things adjusted here, so Kate, the way the show begins is with a big question. Mm-hmm. Who are you? What do we need to know to start this conversation?
That is a huge question, but a really good one. I guess I try to answer that question all the time. Maybe I think about it too much, but I circle back sometimes to a photograph that I have of my family, and mm-hmm. I think I was 3 in this picture.
Wow.
So
this is an early one.
It's an early one.
The shape of your life in the beginning.
Well,
near the beginning.
Just who am I as a core person? Yeah, I think each individual has sort of their core being kind of set from early on. Yeah. So I'm there at a riverbank with my parents and my younger brother, and my family, they're all smiling. They're mm-hmm. fairly happy. But there's me in the front with my fingers just dug into the dirt. And that says something about me. Mm-hmm. I love being outside. Uh-huh, uh-huh. I love digging into things.
Right, right, right.
I don't mind getting dirty.
Right. You love the physical experience of it.
I do, definitely. Yeah. So, and I think I'm most myself when I'm outside and with other people. So mm-hmm. that informs mm-hmm. who I am.
And what are the sorts of issues or challenges or concerns that you care about in this hands-on, fully engaged sort of way?
I think I care about getting something mm-hmm. done. Mm-hmm. I look as a child.
Doesn't
like
matter so much what it is. You just want to be with it and get it.
Well, I think it does matter what it is, okay. But just ready for action, ready to get in there and do something, and surrounded by people. Mm-hmm. People are very, mm-hmm. very important to me. In isolation, I lose energy, mm-hmm. And people give me focus and purpose, especially loved ones.
Right. Right. No, that's neat. That's neat. What are some of the labels that you wear to kind of flesh out the picture a little bit? That's a great sense of the your quality of life.
Okay.
And what are the contexts?
Maybe I'm squirming a little bit because I avoid labels, which is not necessarily good.
And I want to help you both in your avoidance and in your ownership.
Okay. So. I'm a writer. Uh-huh. I'm a writer at the core. I love capturing stories and putting them down in words and sharing them. Right. So I think that since I was a young child was an identity, mm-hmm. since I knew how to pick up a pen and put swirlies in a notebook.
Right.
So that's still a core part of who I am. I walk around this world looking for interesting stories. And if I don't capture them in writing, they're in my head.
Right, right.
And sometimes they float away and they're lost, but sometimes they stick with me and they appear in writing later or I tell somebody.
Right, and I imagine sometimes they go away and then they come back because memory works that is a funny thing.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm also lately discovering that I'm an actor. And uh-huh. sometimes maybe I was an actor before I was a writer. A lot of my impulse in writing is to beat different people, and that's the core of acting.
Right.
So in the last 3 years, I've been able to say I'm an actor, and it goes hand in hand for me with writing.
That is neat, and those are labels that you are comfortable wearing openly.
Yes, and it's taken a while to get there because when you say I am a this,
right.
the voice in the head says, "Well, prove it. What have you published?
Right.
What have you done?
What stages have you performed on?
Yes. Has your does your CV back that up?
Right.
And
right.
when you're becoming anything, you go through a stage where you can't back it up, or you're aspirational, or you feel like the things backing you up are not as good as they could be, or you come into it.
One of the ways of defining, and I have no idea whether you're religious or not, and I hope mm-hmm. this is not offensive, but one of the exercises I used to do with people was I would ask them to take the term I am what I am, which mm-hmm. is also Popeye's line, but it's also one of the translations for the name of God in mm-hmm. Hebrew. And I would get them to say it, I am what I am, I am what I am, I am what I am. And when you say it with all those different emotional tones, you're very different people.
Hmm.
And we are all of those people at different times. And getting people to kind of be able to say that in all different emotional tones, in all different settings. It can be grounding, because we don't do a very good job of helping us ground ourselves in real time. Mm-hmm. We need that document, that CV, or that verification that's out there. And it's good to get feedback from others, but it's also good to know the ground on which you stand.
That's a great way of putting it.
Or the riverbank, as you were, or the side of the whatever you were putting your hands into the mud in that initial image.
Definitely. That works for me.
Yeah, cool. Good. What should we open with?
Musically. What song?
Yeah.
Well, I think you played a little bit of Human Behavior by Björk.
We've got it right here.
You've got it right here. Let's start with that.
And Human Behavior. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Kate Klein. Kate, what about that song? Why that song?
I love Björk's imagination, and I love her voice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So those two things together, I've been a fan of hers for a long time, since her first album came out, and this is the first track on the
first album. Yeah.
So I feel like I almost don't know what track to point out to use, but I thought, well, just start at the beginning. So she's Icelandic, mm-hmm. and as a child, she would walk long distances in this very bleak landscape and make stories up to herself, to a beat mm-hmm, of her own feet walking. And I can hear that in a lot of her music. Her beats are very much a part of her.
And they're at the pace of a human walking.
A lot of them are. Some are more up-tempo, but a lot are that andante, just foot, one foot after another at a walking pace. And I love the imagination that she puts into them. I've always been drawn to the Northern European kind of dark imagination that comes from, I think, a lot of darkness in the winter.
Sure, sure, sure.
Scandinavian mythological creatures and
not a fear of the darkness. It's a, how do we inhabit this space?
Yeah, actually, yeah. How do I bring meaning to something that's that's dark and bleak?
Right.
Or warm meaning or emotion?
Right. Yeah, and it's hard for me to inhabit a space that I don't find meaningful. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's a survival. It's a and it's almost like a prison sentence,
right,
as opposed to an experience of fulfillment. And I think that's what you're saying.
Definitely,
you're kind of walking into what I'm thinking is the next question, which is, what have you had to learn or experience in your life to know how to live the life you value now? What have you had to learn? What have you had to experience, since you are an experiential learner?
I am.
And I'm thinking of the walking of Björk, and I'm also thinking about my first date with my partner when I said to her, "Were you in a marching band?"
Oh,
because she had this really regular rhythm of, and I was a drum major and in a successfully competitive small town marching band.
Yeah,
and it just felt too familiar.
Wow,
you know, and so that was on our first date. So I kind of I have a sense, you know, what did you need to experience to get to own your writerness, to own your actor?
I've had to learn to find and listen to my own voice and be confident in saying what I think and feel, and finding unique things in my own head and getting them out. I do have a crazy imagination, and it doesn't always mesh with the rest of the world. I don't always fit in. And that sometimes, as I was younger or less experienced, I thought, well, that was something to hide. I need to keep that from everyone because I'll be weird. And I've had to learn when I say something odd or it occurs to me, you know, following my imagination, that other people actually resonate with that or appreciate it or say, well, that's weird, but I like you for that.
Right. So it's been a process of giving yourself permission to share what's going on.
Yes, very much so.
And when people say, ick, you know, I mean, does that happen often enough that I'm thinking gender here. As a woman, I imagine my imagination is that you're going to be reluctant and you're going to want to put these things out in trial balloons and test them.
Yeah, that's true.
Until you actually get them, and some men kind of throw them out and say, well, "If the world doesn't get it, well, damn the world," you know.
That's very true.
And that's a stereotype, because men and women actually do it both ways. But I would imagine majorities run in the stereotypic way.
Yeah.
But you seem to have owned it.
I'm learning to own it. I'm learning to own it, and a key to that has been the acting studying that I've been doing in the last 3 or 4 years now.
So when you're playing others' roles, you're practicing getting stuff out.
In a way, yes. And also,
that makes a lot of sense.
Also, the technique of acting that I've learned is through the Actors Workshop of Ithaca. It's the Meisner technique of acting, where before you play any roles at all, you are yourself on stage, reacting as you yourself would react, and you must react. It is imperative that if somebody is making you feel something, you have to say it, and that is really uncomfortable sometimes.
Show it, or in some way express it.
So you struggle with it, and then you realize that you or the other person doesn't explode, and emotional honesty actually does do good things, and then you can proceed into using that core honesty to portray other people.
Right.
But the key component there is there's a thought in your head and you get it out.
Right. And I was in a seminary program where the most beloved professor on the faculty was the voice coach. He had no theology degree, but they raised millions of dollars to endow his work after he retired so that he could go out and work with people. He freed their natural voices.
Wow.
Which was, he taught them how to let go of the boxes they put themselves in, the way they thought they had to sound, and just discover the way that they sounded.
Hmm.
And become comfortable with the emotion and the content and the pacing of that.
Fascinating.
So it's very similar to what you're,
fascinating.
What you're saying.
Yeah.
So when did the light bulb begin to go off that this was a good thing for you to follow, that you needed to go in this direction? How did you choose it?
Acting.
Yes.
Well,
And being out loud. I mean, acting seems, it's more to the point is being out loud, but acting seems to be the occasion for clarity about the choice.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'll just stick to the acting thing because I just will. A good friend of mine, David Kosick, is one of the teachers in this program, and we've been friends for a long time, and as we were friends, he kept kind of elbowing me and saying, you need to take this class. You need to take this class. And I put it in my brain and delayed for a year, maybe two, and then I finally took the class, and the first semester was really, really difficult for me. I'm not sure why. I think it's difficult for a lot of people, but it's hard to be emotionally honest. And because it was so difficult, here's where I discovered that this was a good thing for me, though.
Mm-hmm.
It was summer, and I love summer. I love being outside.
Mm-hmm.
But I committed 6 hours a week to being in a small, dark, enclosed room.
Right.
To study this.
The Meisner technique.
Yeah. We're in a tiny studio with no daylight, and I loved it. You know, I wanted to keep going back in the studio instead of, you know, I could have quit and said, forget this, I'm going to go to the beach every night, but I didn't. I stuck with it. So that started telling me that something in that box, those humans I was interacting with were feeding me.
Mm-hmm.
There was something important in there for me to do, and I stuck with the uncomfortable stuff and stayed with it for the next 6 semesters.
Wow.
So that's where it started really hooking me. Yeah. And to back up just a little bit, I have always loved theaters.
Right.
Even though I love the outdoors, I love theaters as well. So being in a live space with seats and a stage really excites me.
Mm-hmm.
And it has for a long time. So this was almost like coming into my natural habitat.
Yeah. And what I'm also hearing is there's a... one of the things I like to say is that we discover truthfulness when something is intellectually accurate, emotionally honest, and physically compelling.
Mm-hmm.
When those three things align, we can generally trust that at least for that moment in that space, it's truthful.
Yeah.
And that almost is like a conversion. That's almost like a turning to one's better or fuller self,
mm-hmm.
which sounds a little bit like what you have been experiencing.
No, I love the way you've combined those three aspects of human experience. Physicality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remind me of the other
two. Intellectual accuracy, intellectual. Emotional honesty, mm-hmm. and compelling to the body, to the physical senses.
I agree entirely. There are so many situations I think we can box ourselves into only focusing on one of those mm-hmm. things without integrating the other three or the other two. And I agree entirely. That's very exciting mm-hmm. to think that all three realms of being a human being can and should work together.
Right. And as a person, they need to.
Yes, definitely.
In particular roles that we have in life and mm-hmm. When an earlier show, we were talking a lot about roles and institutions and organizations.
Mm-hmm.
You can't necessarily express the fullness of your person.
Yeah.
But you need to develop it in mm-hmm. order to be able to relate to other people.
That's very true as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a bit of a tricky thing to figure out where and when you can express yourself in all three ways.
And when you were talking initially, As a child, I was known among my siblings because I'm the seventh of eight kids, and so I named everything. Everything in my world had a different name from its own name because I named everything.
Okay.
I defined the world around me, and I would also conduct the orchestra whenever we had a television that happened to work.
Yeah.
I would turn the pot over, stand on top, and with a wooden spoon, I would conduct the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I was a little big for my britches in the way, but also. But enjoyed this kind of calling out experience and wanted it.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, you don't know how to trust it. Because you need a really good community around you.
True.
To help you, to like with the miser, you get your reaction, but they have theirs as well.
Exactly.
And you work it through. And, right. And this is, and in a world of individualists, we have a hard time understanding that it's not going to spin out of control because you're with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that withness is going to keep it to some extent.
Yeah. Right.
In a livable way.
I like how I'm the balance you're showing with your hands. It is a balance because, so I'm a writer first. I've got an advanced degree in creative writing, and writing fiction at least is very much about going by yourself into your study at your desk and creating things with your imagination, which is a very healthy thing to do for some people. Like, sounds like you are in that boat.
I live in that mode. That's not how I've pursued it. I'm more of a conversationalist than a writer. Yeah.
Well, writing can be very isolating though. And that's one of the things why it's very frightening to share a piece of writing, because you've spent, you know, if it's a long, short story, maybe 40 or 50 hours or weeks or months, or if it's a novel, years, then you hand it to someone and your perception of it is, you just don't know. And you have to wait until they read it and get back to you. Whereas acting is a much more immediate response, or daily conversation, that I find healthy. And it's hard to get too lost in your own world when you're connected with other people.
Right, and that is theater. That is live theater.
Yeah.
And I hadn't thought about it, but with that writing, every phrase, every image is like a separate sinew or nerve or whatever that can be touched and held in a different way by the person who's actually reading it from how you experienced it as its author.
True, right. Yeah. It can be perceived in a different way.
Yeah, yeah, and should be. But it's very hard for us to hold up our lives and say that my life is not just what I think it is, it's also what other people think it is.
Right.
And that too is true.
It is. It is true, definitely.
But we don't often appreciate that.
Right. We don't often appreciate it. And I know, speaking for myself, I sometimes run from it. You know, feedback is sometimes hard to take.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes it's easier to just create endlessly alone and put it all aside so nobody can criticize it.
Or to throw it out and not take feedback.
That as well.
I mean, because people do that.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
That's not your style.
That's not my style. I'm trying to think of a time when I actually have thrown something out and said, well, take it. That's hard for me
probably
to do.
Probably not. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm more cautious, creatively cautious than that.
No, I can.
To my detriment sometimes.
It's in T.S. Eliot's Ash Wednesday, there's the line about the balance to care and not to care. You know, I learned that line from this voice coach in seminary.
Yeah.
That's the task of our lives, is to know when to care and not to care, so that we can throw it out and really want to hand it over with great tenderness.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very... Anyway, neat. Where should we go musically next?
Oh, where should we go musically?
And you've got the list
I've got the list.
And I'm going to do the station ID while you do that.
Okay.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca, 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And this is the Made of Clay Report. I'm Eric Clay, your host, and our guest on this hour is Kate Klein.
Let's go with Familiarity by the Punch Brothers.
Okay, and do you want to say something before we play it or after? And I'm going to play about 3 minutes out of a 10-minute piece.
I know, it's very long. This piece just gets me every time. I'm not sure why. I love the acoustic basis of it. Mm-hmm. And something musically about it draws me. I guess I could go on forever about it. But
we'll play it.
Yeah, let's play it first.
On again, you hate it, but you know it then. You know it, and so do your friends. And you can sing together when. It's on pretend. You love it because you love them. As you explode out of your phones, amen. To make some music of your own, amen. Or you can hate it softly to yourself, alone, amen, amen, amen.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Kate Klein. So, Kate, what had changed in your life, or what had come to a ripeness that you were ready to begin to work with theater? You know, how did you let go? How were you able to let go of that inhibition, that holding back? What were those 2 years of having the invitation on the table that you didn't take it? You know,
yeah.
What was happening to you so that you could begin to take it?
I was starting in some very deep places in my life to be more honest with myself. And seeking treatment for something that I needed to seek treatment for. I was realizing, I don't know where to start with this.
You get to, and this is where you decide what you share. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
I needed help with an eating disorder that was pretty deeply ingrained and had been really a negative focus of my life. So I was seeking treatment for that,
right,
with weekly therapy. And part of that was just learning how to talk,
right,
how to be about myself,
right,
and talk honestly.
Can I want to normalize something here in a particular sort of way. Mm-hmm. So you are probably the fourth guest or fifth guest to talk openly about this on the show. But also the person who introduced my partner and I is a woman who died of an eating disorder because they could not resuscitate her. Hmm. In the airport when she was flying home from a conference. Hmm. And my partner realized at that point that she had not seen what she knew so well because she herself has had an eating disorder. Hmm. And part of the call to awareness and a certain sense of accountability to herself and others was to start a group called the Circle for Healthy Eating and Wellness, mm-hmm. which is CHEW, and they meet now as a support group for people who are coming out various forms of eating disorders, and there mm-hmm. are lots of different things, as you well know. Mm-hmm. And this next week is the Eating Disorder Awareness Week, which is something I just read. I had no idea you were going to raise the topic, but
I didn't know that the week was coming up.
So anyway,
serendipity.
Yeah, but it's a group that meets. I'm thinking from 5:30 to 7, if I remember right, on the first and third Tuesdays of mm-hmm. the month at the Just Because Center.
Oh, very cool.
That's all. But it's something the awareness of which I have become much more sensitive to, mm-hmm. and the difficulty of talking about it, I am very aware of.
Well, I feel by now fairly comfortable about talking about it, but certainly not years ago.
It was part of your living out loud.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and the part that was keeping you from living out loud.
Right. And a lot of, at least for me, a lot of living with an eating disorder was living in secrecy mm-hmm. or being very private, locking things inside, not just being private, but being locked down.
Right.
And
so you couldn't explore or be aware of stuff that was just too hot for you to...
Yeah.
Because you were locked down inside.
Right. And by narrowing your focus to a very specific problem, which is what should I eat or not eat today, you push everything else out. Difficult friendship? Don't worry about it. You've got to focus on lunch.
Right.
Stress about jobs or lack of job? Back burner that. We've got to think about...
Right.
Not eating for dinner or just keeping very, very strict rules. And it makes your life this very tiny little box.
Yes.
And pushes everything else out. It's a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. But
for a world
very
that's too big
one.
And too scary to otherwise engage.
Yeah. Yeah. So your original question.
So how did the world... How were you able to say either I have to engage this big scary world or I can no longer not engage? How did you back into, I'm using backing into because uh-huh. very few people stride right into addressing this. Most
right.
people back into addressing these things. How did you find yourself backing into it? What was changing for you?
Two friends really nudged me in the direction of seeking help. These are friends that I met in graduate school. They're both writers and we're all three on similar emotional wavelengths. Mm-hmm. And they were loving and caring and said, you need some help. You need to seek help on, we love you, but go find some help.
Right.
And that was, we spent one weekend together and did, a lot went on that weekend, but one of the takeaways I had was, okay, something's got to change. And that's where I started trying to make myself more healthy.
Right, right. And you began to take steps on your own, for your own well-being.
Yes. Yeah.
But you had been seen clearly by them, mm-hmm. but you did not feel, it did not drive you into further isolation. It opened you up.
Yes.
How did they see you in a way that helped you to step up as opposed to shut down? Because I imagine it wasn't the first time that you had been approached by a friend. But I mean, how were you able to see their care as opening you up to a good thing as opposed to?
No, that's a good question. I just instinctively trusted them.
Uh-huh. So there was a lot of love there.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And active love. Like active loving friendship.
You don't challenge somebody with that unless you really are willing to go to the mat with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And outspoken love. Yeah. They're both because they're writers, or they're writers because of this, but they're willing to be incredibly emotionally outspoken, like putting names to feelings and saying them in love, but in a creative and new way, a way that goes through, not speaking in cliches and not locking it behind niceties or silence, but rather just speaking the truth in love. And that's what they did.
Neat.
Along with a lot of active, like one friend, I've spent a lot of time at her house, uncountable hours. Her house is like a second home to me. And so meals shared and time together and fun things we've done together. It wasn't just all talking in words. It was dwelling together as friends.
Right. And what I have discovered in my relationship is that I'm the cook. And I have learned how to do the dance of food in ways that opens up food as an opportunity without being something that's scary or shutting down or a matter of a lot of control. But it's been a process. And it's really is a beautiful, you know, that we don't know how to make home for each other or to be familiar with each other. And in many ways, these challenges come because we weren't familiarized or in a certain sense had a place where we felt confident in home to begin with, in that kind of core sort of way.
So you've found that the process of you cooking
and
for being, your partner specifically,
and being sensitive to what and kind of doing the dance with her and it has helped me to appreciate food in new ways and to cook in different ways and to not be judgmental, but to be observant. It's different.
And still seeing food as something significant.
Yes.
Not just physical nourishment, but it's
about control and definition of self and projection in the world and anticipation of problems down the road and all sorts of what you've just described in just slightly different words.
That's a brave position you're in.
Yeah.
It's trying to care for someone through this medium.
Yeah, but it's also people who are in recovery from this are looking for ways to live more transparently without judgment.
Right.
Because that helps maintain and sustain the process.
Right. I agree.
I want to change. We'll come back to some of the things around this, unless you had more you wanted to say on this topic right now.
No, let's move on.
You are also involved in a play right now.
I am.
I would like for you to have a chance to talk about that.
Excellent.
And then we'll come back to self-care, which is the way I close the show, and we'll do that. But so for right now, what's the play? What's your role? When is it performed? Tell me about it.
Great. Thanks for asking.
And I have the whole sheet there if you need a prompt.
Well, I think I've memorized it. I've talked to a lot of people about this in the last several weeks because I'm really genuinely thoroughly excited about it. The play is Maze, and it's a play about Barbara McClintock, who is a Nobel Prize winning geneticist who went to Cornell as an undergraduate and a graduate student in the 20s. And she was brilliant, a brilliant mind, and one of the only women in any of her classes, but just loved plant genetics so much, she just stuck with it. And she has the beautiful personality of, well, I'm going to do what I do, and if you disapprove, well, it's your problem. Yeah, but she received her Nobel Prize for some breakthroughs of the understanding of how genes move on a chromosome, which is now foundational, but she was the first one to break into it, although she encountered some roadblocks along the way. And this play dramatizes some of those roadblocks she has with doing brilliant work on one hand, but being heard and accepted and respected on the other hand. So we're calling it a biopic of Barbara McClintock, but there's some comedy as well because the playwright Judith Pratt has really drawn out the fun, rambunctious personality of this woman, and put it into the play. So I play the part of young Barbara. There is a older Barbara and then me. And we encounter each other partway through the play, which is a really fun moment of an older self encountering a younger self. And I find that, that's a really beautiful depiction of something that a lot of us do. You know, if you could write to your older self, or
my 60-year-old self is looking back at my 20-year-old self, and we're chatting.
We're in dialogue. And that's what happens halfway through the play. We're not in dialogue. And then we meet and talk, and things start going well. So that's really my role in the play, and I'm thrilled with it because I love what I learn about Barbara McClintock. I'm honored to depict her. It's really fun to bring this person to life. And I really love the creative possibilities of having a younger self and an older self in on one stage.
It satisfies the actor and the writer in you.
It does.
That's really neat.
Both at
that's
the really same neat. Time.
And this will be this is being performed this weekend and next weekend.
True.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with the Friday performances at 7:30 and the Sunday performances at 2:30 at Risley Theater at Cornell University. Is there a website to check it out or
Google Maze Play
right
and there's a Facebook page and Facebook event.
And Maze is spelled M-A-I-Z-E.
Correct.
Maze Play.
Yep.
As one word.
It is.
So How did you discover this role? How did you get cast for this role? Why this particular play now?
It was one of those wonderful things that came to me, a beautiful opportunity that I couldn't have dreamed up. But I'm getting more and more involved in the theater community in Ithaca. So a former teaching assistant of mine, AJ Sage, who's also in the play, brought my name up to the playwright, Judith, and said, hey, this actor would make a good young Barbara. And Judith knows me and my work because I've done stage readings of her plays before as she's trying to bring her work to life. So both of them knew me, and I was sort of invited into the circle.
Cool.
And here we go.
Yeah. And I was contacted by Lucy Walker, who does work with Civic Ensemble, and I've been involved with them since their founding.
Terrific for several group. Years.
It's a neat moment.
Yeah.
What should we play next musically?
Let's see.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Kate Klein.
Let's play Here Comes the Sun.
Okay. Yes, this is a Nina Simone interpretation of Here Comes the Sun.
Girl.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and that was Nina Simone and Here Comes the Sun. Our guest on this hour is Kate Klein. So, Kate, tell me about that song.
I love the sound of it, but I also love the multi-layeredness of it. It is a remix of a cover of a Beatles song. So I love how it fits in three things that I really like. I like the Beatles a lot. I love Nina Simone and her voice and her work. And I also love electronic music because of the possibilities for taking things that are already created and making them into something new, like the collageness of the music.
Right. And the way it permeates the walls and the windows and the doors of our lives.
Yeah.
That's what I get with the remix stuff. It just kind of it kind of just inhabits the space.
True. Yeah, I love how you put that. And it makes me want to dance.
Yeah. Which is a little hard in the studio. There's not a lot of room for dancing.
Yeah. But it's very open making sound that it puts together. So thank you for playing that and for making music part of this show.
It's, you know, many times the music allows us to share ourselves, to use the Christian term, in size too deep for words, which are the prayers of who we are that we don't know how to express.
I understand. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah. So, and that's, and it gives us many windows. Mm-hmm. So Kate, the way I like to close the show is with a question. And this is a question that I guess is timely in terms of your life. How do you take care of yourself daily, weekly, monthly, throughout the day, emotionally, intellectually, physically? This mirrors the truth thing I was talking before.
Definitely.
You know, how do you know you need to do that? And how do you know you need to do it?
Well, I know almost instinctively that I need to do that, but I get unhappy when I don't do these things. So
the judgment side comes out, or just the unhappy. Yeah.
I don't know if that's a judgment, but well, let's just put it this way. I run every day or do some sort of exercise.
Oh, and you've experienced that you're not happy because you didn't do it rather than you're judging. I got it. I was misreading you. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I'll just go back to the original. Sure. I stay physically active. So I'm training for a triathlon right now, and I'm really excited about it. It's my first one. And so I either run or swim during the winter months, and I bike when it's warm enough. And that just does wonders for me. After I do a workout, I can notice hour by hour a lift in my mood and emotions. So it's an important part of my life and always has been.
And it's a daily thing.
And it's a daily thing. It's always there for me. And I always look forward to it. There's rarely a day where I don't feel like doing a run or a swim. And that both running and swimming have taken on a wonderful new layer just this year. My two friends that I talked about earlier in the show are also swimming. So this winter, we've all been
swimming together,
crazy passionate about swimming every day. And we text almost daily. So the three of us are always like, have you swum yet? Or how is your workout? And also the emotional component of, I don't care about anything today except this swim, or I'm angry and upset. I can't wait to hit the pool.
Right.
I feel much better afterwards. So we've been, it gives us something to talk about, but I also know that it affects my emotional, just both of those things, taking care of myself physically and connecting with dear friends over it are taking care of me physically and
emotionally. Absolutely.
And then intellectually, I read, recently I've been reading voraciously. I can't stop reading.
Uh-huh.
I just read a lot.
Yeah. I mean, and when did that happen? When did reading kind of become a voracious activity?
As soon as I learned how.
No. But I mean, so recently you've been reading. Recently. I was understanding what made recently different mm-hmm. than before.
Good question. At this time last year, I was having trouble sustaining concentration
uh-huh.
for several different reasons. But I just was finding it very difficult to sit down with a book and think only about the story.
Right.
I was very distracted. I was not in as healthy and optimistic a place as I am now.
Right.
And it's been great to regain that ability to really concentrate and focus on a book or a story for an hour or two. And I'm excited about seeing where that leads,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. I read voraciously as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got to college and got through 2 graduate degrees and whatnot, reading was not high on my list, although I read every day for an hour, but it's mostly news or mm-hmm. short essays or stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And it's mostly online.
Yeah.
And so, but for the last 3 or 4 months, I've been reading books again.
Great.
I mean, and just, you know, one after the other. And it's just kind of like, yeah. wow, you know, I feel like life has opened up and I'm not exactly sure why. But
what started that for you? Was it one book in
particular? I was told you should go read Hillbilly Elegy.
Oh yeah.
In part because it's not how I grew up, but it's close enough in some ways, and I understand both what he's saying and what he's not saying, and why people have taken him to task mm-hmm. about his childhood and how he spins it. But I read that and then White Trash, and it's just kind of stuff that I have owned, but I haven't had the chance. I mean, it's not unlike an eating disorder. I mean, I would describe myself as being raised as white trash. Mm-hmm. My siblings flip out because we were the ones on scholarships. We were the ones yeah. who got out. So we were not labeled that way, but mm-hmm. all of the people around us were, not all, but those who were not of means.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have felt a solidarity with them. And it's been hard to wear that openly. And so what you have is kind of an angry white guy
mm.
when that's not open. So what I'm yeah. finding is this reading is allowing me to do a lot of that expression that I wasn't doing before. And Barking to the Choir, which is a book by Gregory Boyle, who works with homies in Los Angeles and former people coming out of gangs in prison. I studied that kind of stuff in my dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to write about it analytically, which takes the life out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's just great
seeing it in action.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Terrific.
So that's been my renewal.
Great.
And thank you for asking.
Yeah, well,
we can flip the roles here every once in a while.
Yeah. So,
when did you learn that this triumvirate of reading, exercise, and emotional connection? When did you discover this as a path for self-care? Or when did you start taking care of yourself in these different ways?
I think in some ways it's always been mm-hmm. there with me. I've always been a very physical person, mm-hmm. always very physically active.
That's the picture you described yeah. in the beginning of the show, you know,
yep.
hands in the mud.
Hands in the mud on a riverbank, like, yeah, this is where I belong. But I'm so intellectually curious.
Mm-hmm.
The reading and expressing myself to other people, intellectual and emotional, have always been there as well. So it's hard for me to separate them out. And I think I've gone through a phase of unhealthiness where they started getting separated out and now they're reintegrating again. So, you know, back to the acting thing, I'm not sure if this is totally true, but it's the way my memory is telling me right now
yeah.
that acting has allowed me to reintegrate emotional intellect and physicality together or start me on that path. So
right.
I'm coming back into that.
Right. And what I sense is it's in a way, as an adult, we do these things in ways that are different than what we just come up as children doing
mm-hmm.
unselfconsciously.
Yeah.
But you are choosing to do it now and choosing to figure it out.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a big step.
It is. And I'm not sure how this fourth dimension helps in any way, but there's a spiritual dimension to that as well. Yeah, and I think when you're getting the three of those things to work in tandem, it becomes spiritual as well. And I've been on a spiritual track as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, what I had to articulate those as three separate activities, mm-hmm. so that I could get people to work on them as a chaplain and as a mm-hmm. pastor and as a counselor. And when you work on the three pieces, then it becomes obvious mm-hmm. that you're on a spiritual journey, because the way they enter, they're orthogonal to each other in some ways, to use the mathematical term. They're at right angles to each other, so they're kind of independent.
Yeah.
But when they work together, they give you a three-dimensional experience, which is profoundly spiritual.
I can see that in my head as you're saying it.
Yeah. So, Kate, it has been wonderful to get to know you.
It's been great to be here. Thank you.
And what are we going to close with?
How do I decide?
Well, you had admitted.
Yes. We're going to close with Bizarre Love Triangle by New Order.
And that's a great name, but what is it?
It's a song I just love, and don't ask me why, because it just makes me happy. Actually, this is what I play backstage before every show I'm in, because it just puts me in
calm,
but also hyped up. It just makes me happy and makes me feel like going on stage and engaging.
Yeah. I sometimes, in my kind of responsiveness, I spoke too soon. Mm-hmm. There is that energy that you have, which is latent.
Yeah.
It's not yet expressed, but mm-hmm. it's also not determined. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful place to be.
Well, this particular piece of music just helps me backstage think, okay, no matter what else is going on in my life, no matter what other worries I've got, I can leave them up, you know, set them mm-hmm. aside for a while, let them go, and just focus on this one thing I've got to do. And it works every time.
Here we go. Thank you.
Thank you.
myself.